Kansas anymore, but we were never really in Kansas. Dr. Stephen Greer is our guest. Got about 5 minutes left with him. The age of revelation, the age of exposure, the age of discovery really is here. And we have the breakaway civilization that Eisenhower warned us of in 61, his farewell address. And it's a big moment, and there are a lot of good forces and bad forces here. But in closing, what else do you think is important, just in closing in part, to people are going to recap?
Well, I think people actually do need to be writing to the president and to their members of Congress saying, look, the Disclosure Project has terabytes of data and hundreds of primary whistleblowers, many of who have risked their lives to come forward. They need to study this and avail themselves of that very quickly now that it looks like they're fast-tracking a disclosure announcement, and that they need to be sure. You'll see the draft of the speech that I wrote for the president and others. It needs to be a very positive forward-looking, because there's no way we can go from the messed up world we're in now to an interplanetary fight or something. This is it's great for science fiction, but that just means the end of our civilization, period. So the only possible future is a peaceful one. And so instead of endless war, we need to look at it as not just world, but universal peace, cosmic peace. And that we're at this point where we're the generation, those of us living here, are going to have to make that decision. But we live in a democracy. And I think people need to start learning about this issue. Now, we have 5 documentaries that you can see on Tubi or Amazon Prime or what have you that go and unpack all of this, and you can see it for free. So I think people need to really start learning about this and then writing to their representatives. I hear from Congress people all the time that I meet with, and they say, we really need to hear more from our constituents. And so I think people need to do that. In the meanwhile, I think people should work for peace and pray for peace, and also for the guidance of the president and our other leaders here and around the world as we enter in this pivotal time in human evolution.
Well, there's no doubt. And you have Trump saying, yeah, we have all these secret weapons. And I don't think that's hype. I mean, we know that's true. We know the B-2 bomber was around the 70s. They were admitted it existed in the late 80s. I mean, from my information, depending on the technological group, on average, things are about 30 years advanced, what we even know, or longer?
I think longer than that. I mean, imagine the fact that we had man-made UFOs flying around the late 50s and early 60s that had actually gone out into space, even before the lunar module that my uncle worked on landed on the moon in 1969. So I think that however
far
along...
You think what Lear was saying was accurate? Because I know people that know Eisenhower's daughter, that she said he told them all this too, that...
Well, I actually believe that we went to the moon, but it was not shown what happened.
Of course.
So I think it's a little more nuanced, and I do know what happened.
No, I was told that by people on the Apollo mission. They said, no, what you saw was the show, but don't work.
Sure. Yep, absolutely. And keep in mind that by 69, you know, that was a good decade after we had man-made anti-gravity devices that were operational, that were not only seen in the skies around the Earth, but also could go in and out of space. And so we actually have the schematics for that. If you look at our briefing document and our books, we actually have the design and schematics for one of them that was an older model that was built in the late 50s and early 60s. And it was a 4-man man-made, disc or bell-shaped UFO that had been all out through the solar system.
Well, Dr. Greer, let's just stop there, but you're hard to get on. But we need to come on sooner rather than later. Let's not wait 6 months.
Yeah, we need to. Yeah, I'd like that very much.
Well, let's do part 2 as soon as you're ready. You let me know, sir.
Okay, thank you very much.
DrStephenGreer.com. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to look at geopolitical issues, Mexico, asymmetrical warfare, Matt Bracken, and your phone calls, Terry and Graham and others. Thank you, Dr. Stephen Greer. I love knives. I know you love knives. They have finally gotten a whole bunch of the knives that were sold out back in, and they've gotten a bunch of new, really nice flip knives. These bad boys right here. I mean, these are absolutely amazing. Flip really easy and locks for you. This is Forest Green, murdered out. It's got my little signature on it, so it's a little piece of history. It's a great memento. It's a great gift for your friends and family, and it funds the operation. And they're up to 50% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're there, get some ultramethylene blue.
What do you got there, Angel Eyes?
It's a new Patriot Silver folding knife from thealexjonesstore.com.
Hey, Blondie, look at me. I got all three.
Waging war on corruption. It's Alex Jones coming to you live from the front lines of the info war.
All right, I'm going to jam in a few final calls from Terry and Graham, then hand the baton over to Matt Bracken. But I'm going to ask him to answer a few of my questions. Before I do that, I'm going to eat my lunch and listen to him because he's really smart and I know he knows what he's talking about. But let me just show you this new breaking news. Unearthed email in the Epstein dump of a month ago has the DOJ assistant U.S. attorney talking about how Jeffrey Epstein was murdered. Right after he's murdered. I am a AUSANEDNY and I'm working on the investigation into the death of an inmate in the Brooklyn MDC. The email reads, written by the individual whose name was redacted, identifying themselves as DOJ attorney and to a recipient whose name was also redacted. Well, here's one for you, Massey. We're not blaming you, but they redacted it. You have the power to unredact. Go get it. The office of the, this is the email of the chief medical examiner told me, which came out public, that it signed a confidentiality agreement in connection with the investigation into the murder of Jeffrey Epstein. The murder of Jeffrey Epstein. We are hoping to extend a similar agreement, and I wanted to see if you could share the agreement or the boilerplate version with it. I am happy to speak over the phone if that's easier. The revelation that Epstein's death may have been investigated as a murder as late as 2020, when President Donald Trump was nearing the end of his term, rattled some journalists, many of whom Monday flagged the email in shock. So I'll put the email up too. So that's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. We just did. And I didn't even get to all the emails about human smuggling, buying babies, raping people, torturing people, just new ones that I found today, the crew gave me. I mean, it is bonker town that all of this is going on. And just imagine what the DOJ has they're not releasing. It just boggles the mind that we are at this moment in time and space. And as Matt Bracken said earlier, and we got cut off because that hour ended. That's why I brought him back, and I appreciate him doing it. Former Navy SEAL, best-selling author, great terrorism expert, counterterrorism expert. He agrees with me that the attacks in Mexico that are ongoing, hundreds and hundreds dead, not just Puerto Vallarta, not just Cancun, not just Guadalajara, all over the country, are the tremors before the big quake. And that they're going to be taking Americans hostage, which they threatened to do yesterday. They're going to be grabbing Proud People's kids. And this is where we're going. And the Democrats are heavily allied with them. But let's finish up with two callers who were very patient and held for a long time with the last guest, Terry and then Graham. Terry in California, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Alex. When you were talking about the Epstein files at the start of the show, you mentioned that there is no connection that Trump's made to the Rothschilds or he hasn't released anything. And
There was no connection to the Rothschilds. I didn't say that.
No, but that he hadn't publicly come out stating that they were involved in any way. And I know that he had loans from them at one point. And something I
found
really
interesting. There's no sex stuff, but there's business stuff. He did get loans from the Rothschilds. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and one thing I found really interesting that I heard recently was that his nomination for the Fed Chair Warsh, his father-in-law is on the World Jewish Council. Is that what it's called? World Jewish Congress. And the Rothschilds are the head of that. And Warsh's stepfather is like the right hand man.
Well, there's no doubt. There's no doubt that the Rothschilds are all over these emails, including hunting people. Epstein says, I'm the main Rothschild representative. We now learn he was the stand-in for David Rockefeller at the Trilateral Commission. That's the head of the Trilateral Commission, the founder of it. Yeah, this is unbelievable.
And, you know, I just want to say that it, as bad as all these things are that Trump isn't releasing, I'm so glad that he's president and not that other bimbo.
But that's the paradox, is that a lot of good's happening, but I can't stand by while the DOJ protects the Democrats. I mean, and some Republicans like Les Wexner.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And, you know, part of me, and maybe it's delusional, is hoping that he's going to do some sort of big economic thing that really gets people pumped up before the midterms, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, everything is about the election. Thanks for the call. Thanks for holding. Yeah. And we're hurt because we feel betrayed, and we'll continue to cover Trump. Notice we've been 80% bashing Trump. We need to also look at the Democrats, what they're doing. Because they are absolutely piranhas, and they're allied with the cartels, and they're getting ready to make their big move for civil war. I mean, Mondami's like, don't leave your houses. I'm shutting everything down. You need 3 forms of ID to even come outside your house if you want to help us shovel snow. What he's really saying is you're locked in your house. I mean, it's just like, oh, but no ID to come over the border or vote. Graham in Texas, and we hand the baton to Matt Bracken. Go ahead, Graham.
Hey, Alex. Hey, thanks for having me on. Hey, I think, you know, Trump needs to be more transparent on the whole Epstein issue. And I was disgusted to see that Megyn Kelly and Bill Maher were, you know, playing denial with how they could be sacrificing babies. There's a story that goes back to a lady named Georgia Tan, and she ran the Tennessee Home Children's Home Society. And her father was a judge named George Tan. She was also in cahoots with Judge Camille Kelly, who was a family courts lawyer as well. What's disturbing about this incident is majority of these babies, over 80%, went to California and New York during the years of 1924 and 1950. And so I think they need to get back to the basics and actually can bring historical information to the public and explain how this apparatus of child trafficking exists. This woman, Georgia Tan, trafficked over 5,000 babies out of the Tennessee Home Society. And she was able to do it through, of course, misuse reasons whenever children were born by single mothers and people who would give up their children for adoption, as well as she would dupe single mothers who bore these children into thinking they needed medical attention. And of course, when the mothers came to and were asking where the children were, she told them that they had died in the custody of foster care while they were recovering.
Governor Northam bragged about 8-9 years ago on a TV interview as an organ harvester. And it's the same thing with the 30,000 kids given to pedophiles by the West German government that all came out. Exactly. That's exactly what they do. It's how they operate. You are dead on. The good news is, the genie ain't going back in the bottle. This is only exploding. So anybody thinks they can cover it up or moving on is wrong.
Exactly. And this woman also had a customer, Herbert Lehman. He was the governor of New York. He was very powerful in New York in I forget the year period. And so she also studied at Columbia University, which I think that's where she got her contacts. She also had to pay bribes to the mayor of Memphis, E.H. Crump. They called him Boss Crump.
Yeah, well, I'm unfamiliar with this story. There's so many. What's the basic search to look into all what you just said?
Oh, just look up Georgia Tan. She is a you could pull it up on Wikipedia.
The MK Ultra documents, tens of thousands of U.S. and Canadian children put into mind control and sex slavery. That used to be on like History Channel 30 years ago. It's just crazy. I mean, this is the predator cult, folks. This is real. Thanks for the call. All right, I wanted to get Matt Bracken back. We got 46 minutes left. I'm going to give him the floor here because he was covering a lot of topics and hurrying. I want to start with 35,000 foot view. This is the tremor before the earthquake. Why the cartels are doing this? You said starting to take people hostage. They threatened to do that yesterday. What's coming next? What do you expect? How's it tie into all the big picture and the Democrats wanting a civil war? Matt Bracken, former Navy SEAL, best-selling author. He is obviously has the site enemiesforeigndomestic.com. Matt Bracken, take over and thank you. Go ahead and unmute yourself there, Matt, real quick. We got you.
Bill, sorry about that.
That's all right, brother. Go ahead. You've been waiting for
I've been listening.
Meddling. Please continue.
You know, your last guest on UFOs, I just had a thought I wanted to get out. Ben Franklin was playing with electricity in 1752. You think about, we thought we were pretty damn technological from the Romans until the 1750s, hadn't even thought about electricity. And then everything that's happened since electricity, we didn't figure out about radiation and quantum mechanics until the 20th century. So who knows what is left to discover that could be interdimensional space, all kind of things. So UFOs don't have to be coming from some planet, a billion light years away. There could be all kind of things that we just haven't cracked the code yet. And with modern computers and AI, maybe we will. But when you think about what a huge jump it was, I mean, we had steam engines, we had trains, ships with propellers, but no electricity. And when electricity came in, it changed everything. And who knows what's coming next? So I was thinking about that during your last guest, but about Mexico, people that I really respect, like Chuck Holton, and he was interviewing Oscar Blue Ramirez, who lives in Mexico. I met both of these guys in Panama with Michael Young a couple years ago. Super guys, just unbelievable guys. Chuck Holton doesn't think this will spill over into the USA because the syndicates, the cartels, are at the top run by rational businessmen. And they know that if they start conducting terrorism, that leads to the cartel in the USA, that there will be immense blowback. That'll like be a quantum jump, with Delta in Little Birds chasing these guys down and blowing them away like the Sicario 2 movie. You're just taking them out on the roads. But I wonder about that. If the Mexican government is now really going to go after these guys and start taking out, the officers, the lieutenants and the the shot callers, they may feel that they've got to leverage it to the next level. So it all depends on how this unfolds over the next couple of weeks, I think, because this is not going away. You can wreck a country. What's happening to Mexico can absolutely wreck a country. If you blow up enough gas stations, just for one example, and you cripple and paralyze the country, regular commerce isn't done. Salesmen aren't making their rounds. Deliveries aren't being made. Supermarkets go empty. You can take it to a next level. I remember Beirut was it started out fairly casually in the early 70s, but Beirut, which had been called the Paris of the Middle East, had almost a 20-year apocalypse where a civil war can turn into like a hurricane that feeds its own self. It just starts pulling in its own energy. And then this hurricane becomes self-sustaining because you have outside players. Their economic model is now like providing arms and providing support to the different factions. So it becomes a self-sustaining model. And Mexico could actually be on the verge of that, or maybe not all of Mexico, but a large part of it. And it's very instructive to compare this to El Salvador, because Bukele did get on top of this. Bukele had to, and this depends on having a man who is got the strength of like a Franco or a Pinochet in Chile, but still with moral values. For example, in America, the Untouchables thing with Elliot Ness and the G-Men, they were going to abuse their authority, but in a honorable way, right? To get rid of the gangsters. So it's always very dangerous when you say, we just have to take the gloves off and start just grabbing these thugs. We know who they are. start taking them out. But I don't see any other way for Mexico. But it's so much bigger than El Salvador. It's, you know, 50, I don't know, 40, 50 times bigger than El Salvador. So you couldn't just say, well, we'll do one state at a time and make it and make it a showcase. That may be the only way to do it. Like Colombia did in the 90s with support from American Special Forces and others, they had to completely transform their military culture so that beginning with the military to inculcate a new culture of anti-corruption, where you know the messaging, the narrative is that corruption is why our country is backward, and anybody who takes bribes is like a traitor to the country. But you have to start from the ground up. You have to fire all the colonels and generals, basically send them out to pasture, put them where they can't do any harm, and bring in a whole other culture. I don't know if that can happen in Mexico. I mean, Mexico and Colombia are not the same countries, not the same cultures, not the same people. From America, it's easy to just compare them like apples to apples, but it's very apples to oranges. But Mexico is in a very tough way. And I think that, as we discussed an hour ago, the actual sicarios, they're unlimited in supply. They can be recruited indefinitely, thousands a week. Guys that don't care if they are dead before they're 30, as long as they have a couple years of excitement, danger, reward. You know, they have no goal, no plan, no hope in life of settling down with a girl and having a family. That's not even on their radar. So the idea of dying in a shootout with the Mexican army, and that's not a big fear for them. They actually, and this you can see in El Salvador, they actually fear much more winding up in one of those giant jails where you have, 100 men in a cell in like five-tier bunk beds in like white underpants and white T-shirts where they get out only to have a little exercise, and there's just absolutely zero tolerance for anything. People look at that and they say, wow, that is so inhumane. That is just the cruelest thing in the world. How would you like it if you were unjustly charged and stuck in that place? And that, of course, could be vastly abused. I would hate to be unjustly charged and stuck into a cell with 200 MS-13 guys. But that is what they fear. They do not fear dying in a shootout. They fear being one of those guys that's being frog marched, nut to butt, head to shoulders, in lines, being taken out for exercise, then back in the cell. To them, that is much worse than death in a gunfight. Much worse. And I don't know who is going to be the man in Mexico that can become the Bukele of Mexico. I mean, it's a huge question. You can't call these guys up from central casting. And some countries' political systems don't really permit that. Like, for example, in the UK, there's a guy named Rupert Lowe, who is a parliamentary guy who's just started a political party called Restore, not Reform. That's Nigel Farage, who's turning out to be a total cuck and sellout. Half of his proposed cabinet are like Hindus and Muslims. So Rupert Lowe, his Restore party, is saying, we don't care. If you don't speak English, get out. We're going to deport millions. He could actually become the next prime minister of the UK. And if he doesn't, at least the people had a fair shot at it. If you move one country over to Ireland, it's impossible to have a Rupert Lowe ever get on the ballot just because their political systems are organized differently. Conor McGregor in Ireland, he was thinking about running for prime minister of Ireland. He couldn't because of their system. Their system in Ireland, you can only wind up in American context with a Lindsey Graham or a Mitch McConnell. That's the only two kind of people you'll ever have running. You're never going to get a Trump in Ireland. Impossible. So I don't know if it's possible within the Mexican political system, short of a military coup by a general, which is always a possibility, but they're going to have to do really, extremely harsh medicine in Mexico to get a hold of this. And you can't do it by you know, having checkpoints to try to find these cartel sicarios. That's like trying to get rid of a termite or a roach infestation with, you know, the things you pick up litter with, you know, like a stick with a little thing on the end. You're never going to get rid of a cockroach infestation with like a pin on the end of a stick, right? It's not going to work. You've got to find the nest. You know, you've got to, in Starship Troopers, you know, you got to find the queen, right? And the only, so in the Mexico situation, they have to take out the officers and the generals, the cartel syndicate bosses, the shot callers. Those are the only guys that matter. They have to be more worried about winding up in a U.S. federal supermax, you know, where they pipe in the sunlight, where you know, you're like in the Unabomber's old cell, right? You know, you've got the cell from the Unabomber, and you're not going to see the daylight for the next 20 years. When those guys get extradited to the U.S. and they're working their way up the chain of command, that's when the cartels will be beaten. You cannot beat them by trying to stomp out sicarios. They have an infinite supply of them. But my fear is that before any of these can happen, Mexico can turn into a Lebanon. It's very easy to do this. It's not impossible. Everybody has the same needs. You have to have fuel for your vehicles to, you know, go to your job or run your business. You have to have food at the supermarket, and you have to have a payment system for it. If they're burning down gas stations across Mexico, it's going to get real ugly. And the Mexican citizens that are just watching this unfold, they're much more terrified of the cartels than of the police, because the cartels will hang them off of a bridge. You know, the cartels do these terrorism expositions where they'll like line up people and shoot them or hang them just for the, you know, for the citizens to watch. You see on that picture, there's a big banner that they hung with them. It's like the demands of the local cartel. That's Monterrey. That's not like, that's a nice part of Mexico. That's the demands of the cartel. Do this, do that, or else you'll be hanging here like this. So it's an evil, evil system. And it's going to take a really strong hand, like a Bukele or a Francisco Franco or a Pinochet, to deal with that. Look, see that? They march these guys, they're like, you know, they considered opposition. They march them, sit them in chairs, shoot them so that the locals will find them. Like, this is you if you go against the cartel. You're not going to beat these guys with standard law enforcement. It's going to take something like a Franco, a Pinochet, or a Bukele. There's no other way. Anyway, we're going to wind up this section, and I'll see you in a few minutes after the break.
I have told the folks at Bigley, I said, I want to have the widest selection of combat daggers, trench knives, folding knives, you name it. They're high-quality brands that you buy in bulk that are very competitively priced. And then support the broadcast, because I love knives. I know you love knives. They have finally gotten a whole bunch of the knives that were sold out back in. And they've gotten a bunch of new, really nice flip knives that I went out and told them what brands I liked, what was going on, and they were able to get it. And so a bunch of the knives that sold out a few months ago, they're back in. And then these bad boys right here. I mean, these are absolutely amazing. Flip really easy and locks for you. This is Forest Green, murdered out. It's got my little signature on it, so it's a little piece of history. This is a great knife. This knife sells in stores for $75 all day long. We're selling it for 40-something and even bigger discounts, up to 50% off right now. Some of these knives are as low as $20 a piece. It's a great memento. It's a great gift for your friends and family, and it funds the operation. Go there now. We've got also the murdered out black, and I love how it's that Kydex, and it's got that real fine engraving on it, so it gives you that great feeling, that great, because I got sent hundreds of knives from dozens of companies, and I'm the one that chose all these. And these are from really good companies, really good quality, and it's just a great deal. And so do your knife shopping at thealexjonesstore.com. But let me tell you what's back in stock. We have the new ones, Alex Jones Blackout Folding Knife, 7.65 assisted opening folding knife, 3.5 high carbon Damascus blade, 1095 plus 515N20. This is all quality. D2 steel, black PVD coating, and stonewash finish, 3.3 millimeter black thickness, black G10 handle for a secure grip, 15.5 millimeter handle thickness for confident hand feel. Ball bearing pivot system for smooth deployment. I mean, it's a nice quality knife. All black, blackout finished. I call it murdered out. Fast, decisive, assisting, operating. Limited production, live before it sells out. And then we've got the same knife, but it's silver blade folding knife. If you like that, it's got a nice little hook on the end so you can tie it to things. The forest green folding knife that is my close second, really a sexy knife. Same as the other one, it's just got that forest green. Call it forest, it's kind of like an in-between forest and olive, but nice. Kind of Border Patrol, I call it Border Patrol green. Let's change the name, Border Patrol green. That's actually what it is. This bad boy, these all sold out, but they always hold back a few hundred in case orders come in later or whatever. So tip of the spear, Spartan, trench knife with brass knuckles, murdered out, and the skull crusher, a few hundred of those. They held back a few of these. It had sold out, but there's about 200 left. The Vlice Fire with this beauty limited edition. That funds the operation as well. It's a little different. Skullcrusher isn't as big. Alex Jones Phantom Folding Knife. This has been sold out. They only got 500 of these the first run. Sold out in one day. It is back. They got 1,000 of them. And it's just a great knife. Really sleek and really strong. Very well made. You've got it in orange. Alex Jones Burnt Orange Folding Knife. I like that. Now we've got the Alex Jones Ring Blade. This sold out the quickest last time. That's an amazing product. And they're up to 50% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're there, get some ultramethylene blue and take advantage of the very best supplements in the world. We'll be right back. Thanks for funding the Second American Revolution worldwide.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
The program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Yeah, welcome back. You know, I wrote this. This is my second novel. I wrote this in like 2006, okay? And if you see the cover, the thesis of this book is not that Mexico is the government of Mexico for Mexico City is going to take back our Southwest, but that our Southwest is going to become part of this narco state, you know, this cartel run state, so corrupt, just absolutely not part of the United States anymore. Judges corrupt, governors corrupt, just as corrupt as the worst parts of Mexico. And that is spilling across the border. And that is, you know, a risk to us all. But I want to switch gears and start talking again about the biggest threat on the horizon. As bad as Mexico is, yes, it'll be terrible. It could become a gigantic Lebanon. And look, I love Mexico. I've been there lots. I've been there by car. I've been there by boat. I've been there by, you know, I've flown in, driven in, hitchhiked in. Mexico is an awesome country. If you know, I do this mental experiment. What if you put, instead of Mexicans, you had 50 million Japanese in Mexico, or 50 million, pick a country. It has all the resources, fantastic climate, agriculture. The right down the middle of Mexico is the Sierra Madre. Remember the Humphrey Bogart movie, Treasure of the Sierra Madre? Gold and silver, like right down the middle of the country. You know, they call avocados the green gold. And the cartels even run that. So when you buy avocados at your local supermarket, it might have come from a cartel run avocado grove, not meaning that they are picking the avocados, but that they're extorting the growers. That's how involved the cartels are in Mexico with every level of their society. Everybody has to pay them. In fact, some of the resorts, or many of the resorts, not outright owned, like the deed doesn't say, you know, the cartel owns it, but they money launder by buying these resorts, like the movie Casino and other movies, with the mob buying the Las Vegas properties. These big resorts are high prestige, a lot of cash flow, so it's a great place to launder drug money. So it's ironic that many of these Americans that are saying shelter in place, they may be sheltering in place in a resort that's actually not, you know, legally, but actually virtually owned by the cartels. So depending on how things turn out, you could have a hostage situation with Americans in hotels down there. I don't foresee it. It sounds like airplanes are starting to take off. It sounds like the spasm of the last 24 hours is winding down. I hope that it does. And I hope that what happened, unfortunately, with at least dozens of Mexican police and soldiers being killed in the last 24 hours, I hope that steals the resolve of the rest of the Mexican government, police, and military to go after these guys hard. And like I said, they don't fear death. They fear winding up in a Bukele-type prison. That's, for them, worse than death. But I wish only the best for Mexico. It's such a beautiful country. Anybody that's traveled through it, it's just an unbelievably rich country. And if they can sort out the corruption and have a strong hand in charge of that country, literally a Franco, a Pinochet, or a Bukele. You know, Bukele turned El Salvador around. El Salvador was run by the Mara Salvatrucha and the MS. You know, they were run by these gangs. Now those gangsters are in those prisons, and it's the safest country in Latin America, and people can, you know, build businesses and enjoy life again. So I hope that for Mexico. I sincerely do. Now, the other big story is at the other side of the world, thousands of miles away, we have the biggest fleet and air armada ever assembled since Desert Storm in what, like 1990 to 92? Unbelievable amount of our air assets are over there. So if this doesn't work, let's, you know, if something happens where planes are being shot down, a huge amount of American force is at risk presently. A huge percentage. This could be worst case. Some people call me Mr. Worst Case Scenario. So it could be an emperor's new clothes. You know, the emperor has no clothes moment where countries learn you don't have to just surrender and knuckle under to Uncle Sam because his weapons are not omnipotent. But maybe they are, or at least they're enough to completely wreck Iran. And I'm really sorry to see what Trump gave the key to the White House to Benjamin Netanyahu. He's visited like practically every month. I'm sure it's more than any national leader has ever visited the White House in history. And many say that's when Trump is told what he's got to do, that we're doing this on behalf of Israel. Because I do not see a benefit to the United States of America of taking the chance of exposing our military as no longer omnipotent. That's one risk. Another risk is the Strait of Hormuz is closed and we can't reopen it. You know, it's one thing to lay waste to Iran, destroy their economy, cut off their power grid. That will not reopen the Strait of Hormuz. If these missile teams that are on mobile, that have anti-ship missiles on trucks, and I'm not talking about these huge Scud missile-sized ballistic missiles that can reach out and hit Israel and beyond. I'm talking about their versions of the Chinese silkworm and other other anti-ship missiles that are essentially on a vehicle smaller than a fire truck, okay? They can roll out of a cave or another hiding place, fire at a ship, and these missiles are going to fly supersonic at sea level, very difficult to intercept, especially if there's a salvo fired. At the end, they'll go vertical and then dive straight down, have all kind of attack profiles. And there's really no way that we can guarantee that we're going to find all of these hundreds of anti-ship missiles. So no matter what happens in the rest of an air war against Iran, we can cut off their power. We can kill all their leaders. If those missile teams have standing orders to not surrender, you know, to go like the Japanese in the Pacific that wouldn't surrender, these are dedicated Iranian, you know, Iranian Revolutionary Guards. If they are told, no matter what, you are not going to surrender, if there's no communications, if the Commo link breaks down, you don't surrender. You will keep the Strait of Hormuz closed until you hear, you know, the next Ayatollah give you a verified command. And if that doesn't happen, you just stay in the cave until your order, you open the envelope when the communications are cut and it says, you go out on day 29 and take out any ships. That means a guy goes out with binoculars, looks around, and sees a ship, shoot it. The truck comes out, boom. There's no way, I don't care how awesome our Air Force is, there is no way we can guarantee to get all of these hundreds of anti-ship missiles to be sunk. You know, not to mention mines that may have been laid and so forth, but mines are a different problem. But just the mobile anti-ship missiles, you don't have to take out an aircraft carrier or a destroyer. All you have to do is hit a couple tankers, and the insurance companies will say that you can't pass through there. You're not insured. That means that unless the USA would reflag all the tankers in the world that go to China, Japan, and Korea, which isn't going to happen, and then force their way through with all of our destroyers, which can't happen. We know this from our experience with the Houthis in the Red Sea. Our ships, our Arleigh Burke-class destroyers, just for one example, they have some very awesome capabilities. Their standard missiles have a you know, medium effective anti-ballistic missile capability. They're fairly good at shooting down incoming, like one Iranian silkworm missile variant, maybe one. Against salvos, they can't deal. We know this from the Houthis in the Red Sea, and the Houthis are like the, not even the JV team. They're like the, you know, the middle school team compared to Iran. Our ships have only a limited number of vertical launch missiles. You have to have a mix when you leave. You have some that are offensive, like harpoons, some that are defensive. So it depends on what your mission is going to be. But there's a limited number, a couple dozen. When they're out, when they've been fired, the ship has no more armaments other than the guns, which are useless in this scenario. They have to leave the entire theater, go to a safe port, which would be like Bahrain, which may not be safe if we're in the middle of a war with Iran, and reload dockside. So America is like a team of gunfighters that is ready with six shooters. You know, you've got all the Sioux Nation out there, thousands of Indians, and you've got 100 guys with six shooters. But when their six shooters are empty, they got no more bullets, zero, right? And the Indians have infinite arrows and horses. So our Navy is very awesome if it's going to beat the crap out of, say, Libya. But it couldn't even keep the Red Sea open against the Houthis, who have no Navy. It's only part of Yemen. So they're being supplied with and building their own small, cheap drones that cost in the neighborhood of, say, $100,000, coming out on the back of a small truck, setting up a position, firing at some ships in the Red Sea. We have to fire $3 or $4 or $5 million worth of missiles to knock down a $100,000 drone. And in a couple days, the destroyer's out. It has to leave the area, be replaced by another destroyer. So what does that have to do with Iran? All of our ships that we have assembled in the area have a limited magazine capacity. When they're out, they're out. The carriers that we have are, in some scenarios, maybe useful, but they have to stay so far from Iran that the combat radius of their FA, that's like fighter attack, FA-18s, their combat radius is so short, and the threat from the Iranian missiles is so great that the carriers have to stay very far away from Iran. Yeah, that's what's one of the missiles that could reach right there. You see that's one of the missiles that could reach Israel from Iran, that can, you know, basically blow up a building, create a huge crater. We have bases all over Iran now, or surrounding Iran, ships in the Mediterranean. The Gerald Ford is now arriving in the Eastern Med, primarily to defend Israel from attack. And it's ironic because it's the escorts of the Ford that will be doing the missile defense, or assisting with the missile defense. And now there's a story today that the Gerald Ford, which was the ship that was off of Venezuela for 6 months, that there's a severe morale problem because most of the toilets on this ship, which has got almost 5,000 sailors and Marines on board, their toilets don't work. See, these ships need maintenance, just like the aircraft. An aircraft carrier is not a frigate, okay? You can't say, just take a bucket and throw it off the side. An aircraft carrier is such a huge warren of steel passageways, multiple decks. Inside of an aircraft carrier, all over the place, you have, like in a shopping mall, only a much bigger map. You are here, because it's like, you know, there's 10 decks up and down, and, you know, 18 passageways sideways, and it's 50 compartments. There's no way, if the toilets aren't working on an aircraft carrier, you can have like a bucket brigade of people dumping the stuff over the side. So the toilets on the Gerald Ford aren't working. It's almost like a meme now of our overextension, of our inability to like project as much power as Trump wants to project, or is trying to project. And I'm very sympathetic to him, but I'm sorry. I feel like Trump is being misled and mishandled by his, you know, inside of the bubble with Susie Wild as his gatekeeper. She's a fervent Christian nationalist. She's like an ally of a Mike Huckabee. You know, Huckabee the other day with Tucker Carlson, he said that Israel could claim, they could claim the land from the Nile in Egypt to the Euphrates in Turkey and everything in between, caused a major diplomatic storm around the world. You won't see this on American news. You know, that it's like, are they still covering Nancy Guthrie? Have they found her yet? Or the gold medal, or maybe a little bit of Mexico. Lots on the blizzard in New England, but nothing on the rest of the world being so done with America flexing its muscles and projecting its power around the world this way. And when we talk, when you put on American news, they talk about we're negotiating with Iran, like we're just negotiating, like we're the referees. We are holding a gun to their head, and we're saying we're going to shoot you in the head unless you give in to all of our demands. No nuclear program of any kind, no missile program of any kind. You have to completely cut off all of your, what we call proxies, your allies. Like, how many allies does America have around the world? Imagine somebody demanding we no longer provide any assistance to our allies. So all of these demands are being made on Iran while we're holding a gun to their head. But they may be figuring it's better to just not surrender this time and take what's coming, because you know, if they have no missile program, for example, we're demanding that they give up their missile program. There's no treaty on the planet that says, you know, Guyana or you know, Congo can't build missiles. There's no nuclear proliferation treaty about that, notwithstanding the fact that Israel has nukes and is not a member, and we don't care. But there's no program against building your own missiles. Imagine putting us into a Second Amendment context. Imagine a new government comes into power, like in Virginia, and they say, for your own safety, you have to give up all your guns. But don't worry, we'll protect you. You know, after you give up your guns, we'll have no more reason to come around here with SWAT teams, and you'll live in perfect peace. Who would believe that? You know, Gaddafi in Libya tried that, and look where it got him. You know, and Gaddafi, if you really study the guy, I mean, he was a boogeyman, like a almost on the level of like a Saddam Hussein, the way he was portrayed, or an Assad, the way he was portrayed. He was building huge waterworks to basically improve the standard of living of the Libyans. He was a man that, compared to almost any dictator, lived very humbly and was trying to raise the standard of living of Libyans. When he started talking about a gold dinar, a gold-backed currency that would begin in Libya and be used for trade in Africa, he was done. That was the end. You know, we took him out. In fact, we sided with the ISIS terrorists who were hiding in, you know, in the eastern part of Libya, the Benghazi area. We took him out. He said, look, you don't understand who these guys are. We took the side of the ISIS terrorists in Libya. We did the same thing in Syria. We took the side of the ISIS terrorists in Syria. You know, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, they were our guys in Syria. And the man who had a $10 million bounty on his head, he was the number two head chopper under al-Baghdadi, right? He was the number two head chopper. His name was al-Jolani. Now he's changed his name, put on a suit, and he visits Trump in the Oval Office. That's our man in Syria. So what happened in Syria is very important to understand. In my opinion, this is what Israel's goal is for Iran. Syria had a stable government. It was a multi-religious government. The way that they used to do power sharing would be, you know, the Christians have this part of the political system, the Ba'ath Party, the Sunnis, the Shia, a power sharing thing. We blew that up. Now Syria is a place where the Christians and the Alawites are massacred, murdered, raped, set on fire. But we love it because they're no longer an ally of Russia, and they have no more weapons left. They have no military, no air force, no helicopters. So it's just a warlord free fire zone for Israel that poses zero threat to Israel. Israel took the mountain that's there just into Syria, beyond the Golan Heights, and can now look down on Damascus. And in my opinion, that last meme that was up, that's Israel's goal for Syria, or excuse me, for Iran. They do not think, I mean, we're not even talking about boots on the ground. We're not going to put men into Iran. It's 92 million people. It's like five times bigger than Iraq. It's like 10 times bigger than South Vietnam. 92 million people surrounded by mountains. You have to fly hours from the sea just to get to your bombing target. I mean, it's a huge country. They don't think we can take it out. They have no plan on who will replace the Ayatollah. They don't have like a proxy. I mean, this guy, the Shah's son, are you kidding? That's a total joke. I mean, he's a playboy that's a dilettante that's been hiding in the West since he was a little boy. It's not like he's going to go into Iran. That anything you see where they're like waving Shah flags, or that's bots on X. That's complete BS. Nobody wants a Shah return in Iran. Do you see that? It's complete propaganda. But what they do want is to turn Iran into a giant Lebanon, Syria, Libya, a wrecked country like Mexico could be. If you take out their power grid, you destroy the refineries, you kill their, you wipe out their logistical hubs, you stop their supply lines, any country, any modern country, and Iran is a modern country. They've got subways, they've got, you know, airports nice as anywhere in the West. Iran is an advanced country. But if you wreck it, if you take out their grid, you know, you get into an escalation and you think you can calibrate the damage, we'll keep it sub-nuclear. Israel's going to take some hits, but at the end, Iran will be a wreckage. Iran will be a dozen little regions that are battling each other to try to get electricity and water to keep from dying. And that to me is the outcome Israel thinks is attainable. I don't know what Trump thinks is attainable. I honestly don't. I don't know what he's thinking. But maybe in a perverse way, the Mexico situation may tend to make him think maybe we don't need two major wars at the same time. One of them in Iran and the whole region exploding, and one of them in Mexico, which can spill over into the United States. Anyway, I'm very grateful to Alex for having me on today to spin my stories. And I have been writing these books for a long time, and a lot of this stuff has been coming true. So I would recommend, if you want to, you can get them from Amazon. But I will get, for the printed books from Amazon, I get almost nothing. The information's on my website there, enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. About a third of each book is on the website, so you can just read it to see if you like it. And you can, if you need them on Kindle, or if you like audiobooks, that's Amazon. But you can get the book straight from me. And I'm also working on a new novel set in Ireland a few years in the future. So you can imagine that'll be a lot of fun. But I'll see you in the next time. And if you buy your books from me, I can, you know, make you deals. But I'm just amazed to be living in this time, and I'm very grateful to be on, to have this microphone for the time that I do. Because we're just living in an amazing, amazing time in the world. And we just don't know what's going to happen next. Every time you turn on the TV, you just hope there's not an aircraft carrier on fire. Anyway, I'll see you the next time.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
It is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here. A year after the Onion said they bought us, we might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.